Welcome to the Obscure Pastor Podcast. I'm Drew Carpenter, your host on the podcast for all kinds of ministers and other followers of Jesus who work in relative obscurity. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to Krista Dutt. Krista went to Bluffton University and has an MDiv from Anabaptist Mennonite Biblical Seminary, though neither were named that when she went there. Krista has learned a lot from her work as a pastor, a family skills trainer, and at Mennonite Central Committee. While she grew up in an overgrown Christmas tree farm, Chicago is now home. She enjoys watching her son, Ben, being a city kid, and that grandma and grandpa's house in the woods is a cross-cultural experience for him. She believes the church should act and finds herself in places that value action and partnership over debating doctrine. Yet she loves a good theological debate and often can be found coaching her husband, Jim, as he is enjoying attempts at debating online. She has a mild obsession with Pokemon Go, could play board games every day for hours, oh me too, and has a reading habit that has lessened a bit during the pandemic. She is the pastor for The Dwelling Place in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Krista, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, I'll have to explain to people a little bit how we met, because it might be weird that you live in Chicago, I'm in Pennsylvania, and I don't know, you're from a Christmas tree farm and I'm not. But Krista and I are in the same denomination, and so we have these core courses that we have to take to get our credentialing, licensing, and ordination. And so Krista and I sat next to each other at her first core course, my second one, somewhere in the middle of Pennsylvania, Kent, Roxbury, someplace like that. Yeah. And then we both took online Zoom courses for the next two, and we just, three out of four, you're probably the only person I've had three out of four classes. And if I had more than three classes with anybody else, I don't remember them because, you know, you're Krista and I'm Andrew. So anyways.
Oh, thank
you. It's been a good time. And so I've been fortunate enough to get to know you through that experience. And when we were talking early on, when you were telling me about your ministry context, and it was just fascinating to me. And you keep it going. And I want to talk about a little bit about that. But the first question is, you agreed to come on the Obscure Pastor Podcast. Do you consider yourself to be obscure? And if you do, why?
I am intrigued by that question. I was listening to some of your other podcasts and thinking about, do I think I'm obscure? I think I am obscure, but I'm really enjoying that. I've had more public roles in the past, and I feel like now I'm just a neighborhood girl trying to serve her neighborhood. And that feels really good in a way that 10 years ago, I would have wanted a lot more upfront acknowledgement for.
So. Sure. Well, and I don't know if I mentioned this when I was reading your bio, but you've served in churches in like Illinois and Colorado. Were those in more traditional roles than what you're doing right now?
Yes.
Okay. What were those like?
Well, my role in Colorado was a really interesting one. So Mennonite Church has a program called voluntary service, where you go and you don't get paid, but you spend a year or two. I spent two. So I spent 2 years in voluntary service in a community house, living together with a shared grocery budget and all those kinds of things. It was a great experience. And in addition, I was the pastor of our church that we all went to. I was the interim. I functioned a lot as the interim minister for about half of the time I was there. And the other part of the time I was the pastor of Family Connections, which was trying to do work in the community and just gather more resources for that neighborhood.
Gotcha. And was that in inner city Denver then, or where was that?
No, it was absolutely the opposite of inner city. It was in the San Luis Valley part of Colorado near Alamosa.
Okay.
La Jara, Colorado is where it was.
Okay.
And it was two hours to a bookstore. That's how I
did. Oh, no.
Yeah, it was really, you could drive for hours and not see another human being. It was the most beautiful place. It was the greatest learning I have had. I feel a real call to be in the city, but I was feeling like that when I asked to go to rural Colorado. Everyone was shocked, including the people who were interviewing me in rural Colorado. Like, why do you want to come here? And I was really feeling like I was getting tilted to the fact that only God could work in inner city. Like that, I was just feeling like I need to get more balanced. So I want to go and volunteer in a place that's not the city, so that I can really think through why I think that. Even though I might be called to the city, I really need to have a more balanced view of where God can work. So I went there and God met me there. And I learned so much about pastoring. I learned a lot about myself. And I also was a family skills trainer there. And I learned so much about the importance of nonprofits there as well.
And it's, were your, if we call them clients, or were your, the people that you worked with, were they Latinx? Were they Native Americans? Poor white? I mean, talk to me about that a little bit.
So all of the above. Okay. However, that part of Colorado, I don't know about now, but when I was there, people were saying that you shouldn't learn Spanish there because it's, you won't be able to speak it anywhere else. It's some of the oldest Spanish that has not changed because of the isolation that where the valley is. So it's a valley and it's surrounded on all sides by mountains. And the valley is as big as Connecticut, the state of Connecticut. So people don't leave and people don't come in. And so they specifically told me, don't learn Spanish here because you won't be able to use it anywhere else. So Latinx or those kind of terms, it's, you know, it was part of Mexico before it was a part of the U.S. So it feels very different than the current culture of Latinx that I now am a part of in some ways.
Well, talk to me about that. Right now, you serve as a pastor at the dwelling place. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that. It's a very unique ministry. I want people to hear what it is that you're doing, because this is not a traditional church plant model.
That's putting it kindly.
Honestly, not kindly.
Yeah, that's true. Honestly. So we have sort of taken this idea of what would it be like if a pastor was a chaplain to their neighborhood. And my neighborhood, I live on the border of West Humboldt Park and Austin in Chicago. My neighborhood, Austin specifically, has the highest rate of incarceration. And then also the highest return rate from incarceration of anywhere in the city. And mass incarceration is just everywhere you turn, you can see it affects our neighborhood. So when I was thinking about how do I become a chaplain to my neighborhood, I felt like, well, mass incarceration is definitely the issue. There's lots of issues, but that's one that I felt like I knew enough about that I could really dive into. So what would that look like for a church? Well, yeah, how does a church solve mass incarceration? And I wasn't coming up with much. And when I was going around to the experts in the community that are working on this and saying, you know, how could a church be involved? What would that look like? I found out that transportation is a huge issue to go visit And the research that I had done, the reading I had done, and talking, it's clear from the research that if you have strong relationships that you can carry through your incarceration, you are less likely to be incarcerated again, even in unjust situations. And so I was like, well, I guess we're going to have to do that, because churches are pretty good at caring about families, and they can be, at least. And so we should, that might be the way we do it. But then what does that look like? And so we basically have a church in a van. We pick people up in the neighborhood, and we take them to visit their family and friends in prison and in jails that they cannot get to on public transportation. So they're at Cook County Jail, which is the famous big jail here in Chicago. You can get to that really easily on public transportation, but the ones that are, you know, an hour out of the city, which include the juvenile detention center, and any of the prisons, are more than an hour out. And one of my families looked to see how long it would take getting there by multiple methods, and it was going to take 5 hours to get what driving is about an hour and 15 minutes. And so they had not visited their child because of that. So we have a church in a van, and so it looks different than most churches, but we do all the things that a church does. You know, we pass the peace, and there's a lot of confession that happens. I mean, if you think about, I hadn't fully thought about this, but if you have a pastor in a car with you for, you know, 3 hours, and you or just your family is in the car, think about how much confession that calls out. You know, it's sort of like being in an airplane and saying that you're a pastor, right? Like, all the things come out. And all the, you know, praise to God for all the goodness comes out. And just the beautiful stories I hear about people comes out in the same way that when we read the Psalms, we hear about this praise to God. There's a lot of that happens. Folks, you know, take offering seriously. And sometimes that's a financial gift, but a lot of times it's a tip from one family to another about how to deal with the legal system. And then we always have communion. We always have a meal after a visit, and sometimes more than one, depending on how far. But with the juvenile detention center, we always have it after everyone has had their visit. And those times are also very special. So it's not what I thought it would be when we started, but it's a beautiful thing. And of course, right now I'm talking about pre-pandemic. We haven't been able to take visitors since March 18th was my last trip.
Well, how does that work right now? What does it look like for you because the prisons aren't probably accepting visitors, right?
And right.
Yeah. So what do you do with those families? How do you help them keep some of those connections?
So I regularly check in with families to make sure that they can at least communicate in some sense. When I've been doing that, we've been checking in on the like really core needs of these families. A lot of the families that I work with are sort of on the edge of survival to begin with. And so we've done, you know, food drives. We've recently I linked up with a food pantry so that a family can call in and I can pick up their food and take it to them in the van. I'm trying to make sure that they have at least the food that they need. We've done several of those kinds of things we've pivoted, right? We have this group of families, and now their needs are real and their connection needs to be real with their loved ones. But if you're not eating, then you're not worried about talking to someone on the phone. So making sure that some of those needs are taken care of. One of the interesting things that we did after we had pretty intense riots here after George Floyd was killed, and all the stores were closed for about a week in our neighborhood and in the other neighborhoods that we serve. And so we were able to I took orders from all the families and we put in an order at a suburban grocery store and got, you know, all the formula and all the diapers that people needed. And so they put in their order. I wasn't telling them what to eat or what they needed. They put in their orders and I made the big order and I went and picked it up. So really trying to use the van. I sort of think like, okay, I need to use the van at least once a week to keep it running, but also to, you know, that's our way that we use this van for connection. So having a big meeting tonight, a steering committee meeting about sort of what are some official pivots that we need to make.
Gotcha. Well, you host that outside or what? I mean,
It'll be on Zoom.
Yeah, I think about that for I hate to call it a normal church because what's normal, but think about us in a facility that we have, a church building, and for a good chunk of the time right now, especially, it sits empty. Like we meet on the parking lot, you know, we store stuff here that we can use on a Sunday. And so
yeah.
I think about you and your church is that van, that piece of equipment, it's something to be used to be the church, right?
Right.
That's really awesome. And you've had relationships. You've been doing this for how long now? Two years plus?
Yeah, about 2 years. It depends on what you count. We officially launched in April of 2019, but I had been working on sort of getting pieces in place for about a year before that. So about 2 years.
So you do that, but you also work what we call bivocationally. So you have another job, which helps pay the bills and take care of some of those needs through the Mennonite Central Community, right?
Yeah.
Do you have people that are supporting you? I know in a lot of church plants, it's difficult because people are, you know, the concepts of tithing and giving offering, and if they don't have any money to begin with, and they don't have any to give to you, do you have people that support you in this ministry outside of you and Jim, your husband?
Right. So yes, we do. We have been very blessed by the fact that our conference, the Great Lakes Conference, is supporting my time for this project, and which is very gracious. And we also last fall were gifted this van that we have by a family who lives in our conference and heard about this church. And then last December, without me knowing it, I started getting checks from churches and people, you know, like in the end of year giving kinds of things. And so we've been really, really blessed without having to do a lot of fundraising.
That's awesome.
You know, we're not rolling in the dough or anything. But I feel because of I don't have to fundraise for my time, then I can really dive into some other issues and things that we need to figure out for the church. So it's a beautiful gift. I've had to fundraise before and it's not fun. So grateful, at least right now, I don't have to.
Very cool. Well, what are some of the other challenges you faced? Because you have a young son, you have a husband, you have other work to do. What are some of the challenges you face being a pastor and doing it well, or trying to do it well?
I think one of them is a real sense of overzealousness, if that makes sense. So I have this group of families, but it's not as big as a regular church. And I so want to be involved in their life as much as they want me to be involved, right? And so how many texts a week is appropriate? Like, it's that kind of, I want to be present for people. I want those relationships, but it's a small enough group that I could really overwhelm them. I think some of the challenges are figuring when you are doing something out of the box, you sort of have to recreate the mold of paperwork even. So I've heard on your podcasts before about like using a different metric, but I feel like we're not even on the same, like metric isn't even the word like I can use. So one of the challenges has been, you know, we were trying to get liability insurance, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had insurance on the van and they would let us do that. But when I talked to that same company who had been recommended by the denomination and by the conference and by several other pastors I know in the area, said, yes, use that company. And I was like, great. That actually happens to be the company that I have the car or the van insurance through. Yay. So I tried to add it and it took 4 months because they had to really figure out if we were really a church. Mm. Like, aren't you just a nonprofit? Which I think I struggle with too. Like, shouldn't we just become a nonprofit? You know, like, So those kinds of issues and the people that were helping me sort of navigate that insurance process just kept telling me, you know, you are on the cutting edge and you are doing this for the people behind you. So like those kinds of things, I have to figure out how to talk about this church in ways that makes it clear that it's a church, but also realize that we're doing stuff different.
Right.
So I think some of those challenges of trying to figure out if I spent way too much time, partially because we were in the pandemic and I couldn't do other things. Like, are we a church? I mean, I spent 2 or 3 months. Like, how are we a church? How are we in? Why is this not just a nonprofit? And convincing myself so that I could convince others.
Well, how did you arrive at that? That what makes the Dwelling Place a church, I guess?
I think there were two pieces to that. First was figuring out if we were a church or not, but the actually more important piece for me was to figure out that I wasn't an executive director in this position. I was a pastor. And really making that concrete in myself. Like, I've been a director of things and I currently am a program coordinator of something. I know how to do that. But in this role, I'm really identifying a vocation of pastor here. And so then I would work on, okay, well, I can be a pastor and work at a nonprofit too. So tell me about that, Krista. And I really started thinking about what happens and how we hold what happens. And it's more of a church function. So when I was talking about, you know, we may not have a sermon, but we share in ways that are more alike to a church than to a nonprofit. We lament. We give praise to God. We confess. We give assurance, you know, assurance after that confession that God hears that and God forgives that. And God will be with you through that. Like, all of those kind of things that happen in the van are what I would define as church. Initially, I had a thought that we would need to have a separate gathering. And so I thought, we'll do the rides, and then the people who have, you know, experienced the rides will come and gather. But that hasn't been the case yet. And I think if we had that gathering, it would be so clear that we were a church.
Right.
And so then I was like, well, what if the need for that gathering is not there, that doesn't mean that this outpouring of concern and praise and listening to God isn't church just because we're not having a separate gathering.
Right. So. Absolutely. Well, and it, yeah, I totally see that. And I asked the question just because I want you to be able to, I want the people that are listening to this to go, oh, okay. I see it too. Because yeah. Jesus in the Gospels mentions the church twice. And one of the times I think is Matthew 18 or 19, wherever the discipline comes in.
Right.
Like, go, yeah. go do this. And the other one is when he says he'll build his church. Right. Mm-hmm. And so neither one of those are concrete. Right. Right. Neither one of those are physical things. And so, and we yeah. the word church isn't even, I mean, that, yeah, we can get on a whole thing about church versus ecclesia versus assembly and all of yeah. that. But
yeah,
I think if you're praying together, if you're, mm-hmm. and you know, you're proclaiming the good news. You, if you had an opportunity to baptize somebody, you would, right?
Right.
If that happened.
Right.
And you're having communion, right? You're communing right. with one another. And so I think about all those kinds of elements of this is church. And you probably have, there's a certain structure to it, a certain liturgy. You go pick somebody up. There's, you do this, and then you go to that, and then you come back afterwards and you share a meal. All those things are a form of liturgy too. So, yeah.
Yes, we definitely have, we're creating traditions.
Right.
Especially yeah. around, actually, especially around our meal that right. we have. The families that go the most often, if I want to deviate, they're like, nope, this is how we do it.
I'm familiar with that.
So, yeah.
Well, so where do you get inspiration? You mentioned you read, but you don't haven't read as much during the pandemic, but where do you get inspiration?
Well, I get inspiration from people who have not given up in this pandemic. People who are looking at the pandemic and being like, let's get creative, and are doing it in my neighborhood. And doing it in obscurity. No one is watching them necessarily. They're not, no, they don't necessarily know that I'm watching them. Hmm. I get a lot of just inspiration from our community, who community means something here, and most of our community can't get along without each other. Hmm. You know, maybe this week I have a little extra, and then maybe next week you'll have a little extra. And that's really inspiring to me. Hmm. I am one of the reasons why I wanted to do church this way. Was because I wanted to continue going to church, and I wanted my family to be continuing to church. I didn't want to have my son have Christian Ed in our living room from me and maybe be the only kid. And so I get a lot of inspiration from our church that we go to. Especially right now, we are really diving into thinking about how we have learned the lie of white supremacy and trying to figure out how we are entangled and how we can get untangled. So right now we're a multicultural church, and right now I'm in a white caucus. So white folks talking about how they are entangled specifically, and there's the other groups, but I'm not in those. So can't really speak to what they're talking about right now, but I am really loving Tuesday nights right now. And really just feeling like my work as a pastor, I need to be working on the narrative of racial difference and how that has affected my life, and why to make sure that I am not doing this out of a white savior complex, because it could easily turn into that. Oh, look at the white girl helping all the black people. And really getting inspiration from that group and from the leadership of the church to take that on.
Excellent. That's really good. Before we kind of wrap up, since you've listened to the podcast, you might know what's coming. I ask everybody who their favorite musical artist is.
I have two.
You're allowed.
Okay. So Tamara Mann is one, and India Ari is number two. But on any other day, they could be switched.
Sure. I'm familiar with India Ari. What was the first one?
Tamala Mann.
Okay. Not, what kind of music is that?
It's she's a gospel artist.
Okay.
She's an actor as well. She is in a lot of Tyler Perry films.
Okay.
She's a gospel artist. And the reason I find her, you know, elevated over other gospel artists is because during a really hard time in my church life, I found one of her songs that really spoke to me. Mm. So I think during the pandemic and this summer, I've just felt like I need to go back to her and she gets me through.
That's awesome. That's why I ask it. Music does something, doesn't it?
And yes,
it certain, does. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, what's something most people don't know about you?
I sang My Boyfriend's Back in front of my entire school in sixth grade.
Oh, is there a video of that somewhere?
No.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And you did it for like a talent show kind of thing or what?
It was like a part of the spring music thing.
Okay.
But I was the soloist and I had background work, you know, background people, like four girls like doing the background part of it. And I had a poodle skirt on and it was, instead of a poodle, it was a green music note and my poodle skirt was yellow.
That is so awesome. Oh, you probably have a picture somewhere.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess that'll have to
do. My parents would, though.
Sure. That's awesome. Yep. Do you still sing?
In front of
people, I should say. I'm sure you sing, but
I don't really sing in front of people. I probably would. In our last church, I was in a choir, but in this current church, we don't have a choir, so.
We may never have choirs again. I don't know how that's going to work out. So.
Right.
So, Krista, how do people find you if you want to be found? I know, like, Dwelling Place Chicago on Facebook. Is that the best place for folks to find you? Are you Instagram? Do you have a blog?
That would be the place to find me. I'm happy to. You can find me on Facebook just with my name, Krista Dutt. And that's, or my email is fine too.
All right. Well, I'll definitely put the Dwelling Place up there, and I think it's got your contact information if people want to reach out and see what you're doing. Check in on if they want to find out more about who you are and what you're doing. Cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew.
You bet. Is there anything else you would like to say before we sign off?
I think it's important to really think about being a chaplain for your neighborhood. And to never forget that we serve in context. And so to continue to think about how that context is God's and that we need to shepherd that.
You've been listening to the Obscure Pastor Podcast. If you like the podcast, share it with a friend. Subscribe today and sign up at obscurepastor.com for my brief weekly e-letter. It's a dose of encouragement and inspiration. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram @DrewCarpenter. So let's be friends.